This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Gabby Reece Show. Hi, everyone. We have Elijah Allen Blitz, and we are doing our bonus conversations, what I like to call counter talk. For those of you who have not heard this before, I am oftentimes in my kitchen. I'm Elijah sitting at my counter. And we are having healthy conversation. Occasionally, I wouldn't call it debate, but
discourse.
Just a little back and forth. Yeah, we have different about, yeah. Especially about technology. You're always trying to get me to look at it as a tool. So I've been doing that and learning as we go. So I'll just dive right in. You came over this week and sat with me for a bit to really give me just an easy way to start using ChatGPT for something that I have to do every week, which is I choose to write my intros for my show. And it just talks about the guests, what we talked about, the links to the guests, either websites, social media handles, books, and other things. So this can be time consuming, as well as it's not that it's tedious, but you want to do a good job. And so I went ahead and used ChatGPT. You taught me about the cues and just how you can add, change, modify, and then presto, there it goes. So I admit I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Hey, I haven't heard this yet. That's great. I'm so glad.
And the thing is because you can really use specific cues, or just in my case, actually, I didn't ask it to write it for me. I asked it to rewrite it for me.
Yeah.
Because that right now works more efficiently for my needs.
Totally.
Now, I did mention to you jokingly, not jokingly, about college entries for kids.
Right, yeah.
So kids really have this whole thing about they have to do an essay about themselves for colleges. And then I started thinking, I go, well, is AI going to be doing this? Because there's a whole industry around getting into college.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, hey, we're going to paste your face on a lacrosse player and you look like you play lacrosse. I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. I'm just saying there is a real industry of groups that they spend time helping your kid craft something that they hope will get the attention of these universities. And so I asked you about that.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think absolutely. I think what did you ask me? You're like, do you think that's going to start popping up on Fiverr?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like we can look right now, but I bet it already has. Because it's just so easy. All it takes is somebody with like a preliminary understanding of how that system works, and then they can just put it into their algorithm and start to tweak based on what they know.
If it has to be kind of longer.
Is the unlimited character tokens.
Do you think people are going to be doing their thesis and things like that?
I think they already are.
Really?
Yeah. We talked about the lawyer in Florida that actually presented his whole legal brief to the judge, and the judge is like, wait, this isn't true. But that was back when ChatGPT wasn't as good. That was still 3.5 instead of the new one. So absolutely. I'm would bet heavily that it has already happened for people to write their thesis.
It's interesting. I caught a ride the other day from the airport from a lady, but it wasn't an Uber, but it was like an Uber. And she was saying that she did something around graphic arts and then something about writing. And she said Fiverr had really diminished her role, her job.
I would guess that it's probably not Fiverr and people on Fiverr using these tools, because it's not like they're the best in their field. If they're on Fiverr, you know, these are very cheap tasks, or they're charging very little for them, but that they have all these tools to make this so accessible and so easy and so high quality. This is one of the interesting things, because Sam Altman was doing the rounds this week. And one of the interesting things that he said was that he's like, 5 years ago, we thought it was going to AI was going to replace jobs and it was going to go blue collar, white collar, and then maybe creativity at some point. But we don't know, because it's like a magical thing that nobody understands.
They're first.
And it's gone opposite. Creativity has been there's artists and writers all losing their jobs first, and then white collar and maybe blue collar at some point in the future, once these robots and everything starts getting automated, you know, but it's like, there's all these, you know, if you have artists that have now lost their jobs because Midjourney can do just imitate their work or do even a better job in some cases, but you still have 200 people working in an Amazon fulfillment center. It's almost like we've become slaves to this thing. You know, he didn't say this part, but that's like, that's just a really interesting perspective on like, oh, this went way different than we thought.
Who was I listening to? Somebody, some podcast, and they were like, there's no way. Was this the other night? Was I with you? Where it was like, the humans are not going to give up control to the machines.
It sounds familiar, but what's
it? I'm trying to remember. But I thought, oh, is it that clear cut?
I don't think so. I don't think it's that clear cut.
Like the boss won't give up control to the machines, but the boss is more than happy to have the machines do the work.
Yeah. And I think we're all going to start to become bosses in that sense. Like we're all going to become managers and curators for artists, as opposed to just like, we're just doing the design. We're picking the best designs and then presenting those to the clients for an artistic role or for a manager role. You're, you know, what right now be a lower level employee is actually managing all these different tasks because you have these autonomous AI agents doing all these tasks. And you're then presenting this to your higher ups and saying, okay, we've done all these things and here's the results.
Interesting. So just for fun, I did at least two, almost maybe, I don't know if I did three, but I did two interviews for sure this week, Duncan Trussell and Raghu Marcus, with another interview, a woman, Dr. Nicole LaPera, and very different, but for fun. And I read their books. One is the movie of me to the movie of we, and her, she has a third book on sort of being, forgive me, being the love that you want or something. It's her third book, but I read these books and I'm busy, but still I thought, all right, I'm just going to see. So I asked ChatGPT the top five questions that you would ask.
Right.
And they were okay.
Yeah.
They weren't great.
But did it inspire anything?
That was more interesting. And also I'm in this way, not old school, but I figure if you took the time to write the book and are taking the time to talk to me, I'm going to really try to also feel out what is landed for me. Because I also feel like if you listen to someone's show, you listen also for their point of view. So I tried to be disciplined in that, but I did wanted to see, and they were good. Like if I was a 20 something who was like, hey man, how can I get into this? Yeah. And it's a side hustle and I have a real job. It would be an interesting way to kind of jump the line.
Yeah.
And really get a kind of get your head around some of the concepts in some pretty good, solid, broad strokes.
Right. I love that you're still completely like, no, I want to do this. And it's just augmenting it or enhancing it potentially with these tools. Cause like you got the five questions, you're like, nah, these aren't as good. Like for somebody else, they might work perfectly. But for you, it might even prompt from like, that's what I see the potential at. Like,
that was a good question though, asking me, well, did it inspire anything?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, We will say this one, you know, thousands of times, nothing is a substitute for experience. And so you can have all the knowledge and the concept, but it's like, well, wait a second. What does that play out in real life and in experience? And so I think that that's such a great thing because it's like human touch, human company and human experience, even if it's the humanity part. Okay, if we're talking about, you know, getting a product from A to B, all right, maybe we can farm that out.
Yeah.
But did you see the massager? Did I show you that?
No.
They had a robot massager.
Oh, yeah. Did it look good? Because no. They've had those massage chairs at like Sharper Image.
This is like the next iteration of that. Okay. And it was like a flat kind of block. Try to imagine almost like a robot that would be standing. But it doesn't have a head or anything. Okay. It's just like a tall mechanism. Then with this arm that comes out that articulates through what would be like an elbow.
Yeah.
So it could move up and down your back with like this block.
Okay.
So that was there. But it was funny. I showed L.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like studies about the power of touch.
Yeah.
And how you can use all these like guns and things and like a Theragun, not a gun. And, all of these tools, but that there's so much data suggesting that the healing part of touch.
Yeah.
So.
No, there's no, I can't see a near future at some point, all bets are off, but a near future where the robot touch is going to produce oxytocin, you know, or right. all those things that come with the feeling human hands connecting with another human.
Yeah.
Like that's sacred.
And I haven't read data on, but I know that ejaculating, you know, without intimacy versus like masturbation, which I'd imagine also with like a robot or a pocket tool of mm-hmm. sorts, that actually has a different hormonal impact on you and your health.
For sure.
Altogether.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. No, I'm with that. And I also, that one's interesting because I think that's important. Like there's such an epidemic of loneliness.
Yeah.
And like you have a lot of those, you know, young males that are become school shooters. It was like, they were so denied that.
Yeah.
So if we can give them someone in that position, a resemblance of something like that, I don't see that as a bad thing.
So you're saying something's better than nothing.
I think so. In that respect. Yeah, I think so.
I was listening to a pretty in-depth conversation around these dolls that they're making and stuff, but there's no male dolls.
Oh, really? None?
Not really.
None?
Okay, well, I'm not going to say no offense, but you do have a lot of gay guys too. So like, you know, no matter what, but like basically what they're saying is that men are driving this market.
That's not surprising. And I wouldn't imagine it's none. Like even if there's some,
but you know, it's like all around the female anatomy.
That makes sense. I mean,
sad.
It's just biologically we seem to be wired that way.
Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's sad that guys want more sex.
No, yeah.
It's just sad that
we're at that state.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Like I had a female friend that recently like started doing testosterone and she was like, what the? She's like, I had no idea what you guys have to go through. Like, she's like, this is real. This is a hell of a drug. And I'm like, yeah, we live with that.
Oh yeah. What was the thing that we were talking about where a guy was saying, I used to, you know, down to like appreciate a woman's ankle. And then he was taking testosterone and it literally became a thing of like, it didn't even matter. It was just like the sexual drive. I've experienced, not that, but I've experienced a boost in kind of that feeling taking testosterone myself. Mm. And it's kind of wild.
It's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, I do appreciate that.
I think it's a good perspective because then you can have some sort of empathy and you're like, oh shit, you're living with that? Like that's a real thing.
Well, that's a line I've heard in my house.
What?
Well, so my house is filled with women, but I do have one man, and he is very masculine. And one day Laird was in the shower and I was standing in the bathroom and we were sort of visiting or talking. And then I think he caught a glimpse in my eye and he's like, oh yeah, you think it's tough to live with? He's like, try being like this, you know? And I thought, touche. And I just walked out of the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I do. I think we can learn a lot from each other. All right. We'll try to get back onto technology task.
I mean, it's all technology in some ways. I mean, TRT is technology.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes. Okay. We can get back on like the tech in like the AI specific task, but it's all technology in that respect. Those parts are.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I'll have to think about that.
I think.
How's your dating life going? You've had a complex couple of weeks. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm trusting the universe.
So I have to feel that if when people feel things, the world is feeling these things. Mm. And I think even though we're in the new year and there is sort of some, I think new year, no matter what, we're always going to people enter with this optimism, which is great, right? Like I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to work out more. I'm going to spend more time with my friends. It's not going to be so insane in the world. Now that we are 3 weeks in, I do feel my skis were down a little bit yesterday, and that doesn't happen really that often. You saw me snap about the bowl in the sink last night.
It seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll share this. This is something I'm not proud of, but that I did. So last night, I went to the store, I got food, I made dinner. I paid for the food. I have a few people in my house that are incredibly helpful. I have my youngest teenager takes care of her own real estate and that's it. Whatever. So the young adults are cleaning up and they're helpful and they usually do a great job, but I don't know, for whatever reason, it was like a couple things were left in the sink. It was sort of like halfway done, but not done. And I decided that I needed to say something. And I have to tell you, that's, you wouldn't think that coming from my personality, but I did. I was like, hey, are we going to finish this job or not? And the level of stress it puts on me to have to say something to people, it's really weird because it's in contrast to in certain parts of my personality. So after this many years of parenting and doing it, I'm still feel bad that I'm being kind of direct, over direct, or what feels to me is like mean.
This is a question though. Would you have felt worse if you had suppressed it and held it in?
No, I just would have done it and been like, these kids will learn, you know, whatever. No, because I'm a doer.
Yeah.
I'm a come up from the rear and clean up and just get it done person. I don't fuck with that. So
yeah.
I think that it's harder for me to be like, to ask, to get it done.
To say it.
It's just easier to be like, I'm going to get it done and be done with it. Way easier. And it was weird.
Suppressing it.
I don't know that I suppress it. I think it and I work through it and get rid of it.
Got it.
I don't hold it.
Yeah, well, that's a different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, I don't know what came over me. And when I was doing it, I was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you saying anything? And I think it's also a fear of like exposure and entanglement.
By expressing it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to have everything nice and neat.
Huh.
And maybe that's a good sign. Meaning it's a good sign that I said something.
I think so. Because you rarely say anything.
I know.
So when you do, it's like, oh shit, volume's up to 11. Because it's...
Yeah. But I just want everyone to know, like, as a parent... and I'm direct, feel like with my friends, but it is still uncomfortable and hard for me to act like that.
To say what you are feeling or need in the moment.
Yeah, it's hard for sure. And then I even said something I was on a roll last night because Larry was talking about something and I was like, how come the conversations always lead to this one thing? He got his feathers ruffled. I was like, what is going on? Like someone took over my mouth. The gatekeeper was gone.
But anyway. I don't know. There's a time and a place for that. Sometimes you just got
to
say it.
I know. But I think it's good to share that there's other people that can do it. I have friends that can do it so easily, or they have this beautiful spoken voice and they're like, hey, you know, and I'm always like, oh.
Well, it's also, I think that you, like I just said, you don't say things so often.
Yeah.
And so when you do say something, it's just like,
yeah.
What's up? What do we got?
Yeah. And then everyone starts apologizing and then I feel bad. I'm like, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for you to clean the bowl that's in the sink. Don't say anything. Just walk over and do it, you know?
Oh, would you, I don't think if anybody had done that, you would have let them.
Oh, I would have.
You would have?
Yeah.
If they hadn't said anything, you would have walked, beelined and just done it.
Not Vi though, because she always cooks and does everything. Yeah. So I wouldn't have let her do it.
Got it.
But the other two?
Got it.
100%.
Got it.
I've been like, okay. Come on, go for it.
All right. Good to know.
But I'm only sharing that because it's a work in progress.
Like we all are.
So years and years.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough about me. So what I was saying is that in the air, I think it's hard. I think like you go to the store, food is insane. How expensive it is.
Yeah.
It's insane. And so I'm sensitive to this because I'm, you know, I have limits, but I don't have so many limits.
Yeah.
And I don't know what people must be navigating in like price acceleration of food. Right now it's super cold everywhere.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is I saw something and I said to you, how have we gotten to the world where people are, it feels like they're really, there's a lot of batshit crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, very matter of fact, was it 1 in a million?
No. Oh yeah, yeah. I think it's something like that in terms of psychopaths.
Yeah.
I think we can look it up, but I've heard that number that it's like 1 in a million people are psychopaths.
Yeah. And obviously people ranting and raving saying like, I'm a puppy and you humaned me or whatever, that gets a lot of attention. So we see more of that than like nice behavior. Hey, good morning. How's it going? Have a great day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, clear. But I say that to you and you go, but Gabby, like 1 in a million-ish, whatever, is a psychopath.
Yeah.
And they have to hide.
Yeah.
And these people don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not only do they not have to hide, but it's like-
celebrate.
Some ways, yeah, it's at this moment culturally accepted for whatever the thing is, if you're not killing someone. I mean, there's limits, but you know, it's like there's always going to be those 1 in a million exceptions in whatever direction. But when those things are allowed, and not just allowed, but actually amplified at times. It's like, oh yeah, cool. I'm going to be as vocal as I can about whatever my thing is, you know?
Yeah. And the only reason, again, I'm bringing this up is because I'm quite sure people are experiencing this in whatever corner of the world they're in, and to remind them that I still don't think it's a reflection of how most of us are living. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say I don't appreciate alternative ways of living, but I'm talking about the hysteria, the aggression, the quick to correct somebody. Like, I don't think that's the way it really is in the world. And for people to, it's keeping your own antenna and your own energy, like the positivity, whatever words you want to call it, that signal loud feels a little harder right now. But I believe it's imperative.
Yeah, more important than ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So whatever that looks like. So when you get things are tough and okay in your personal life or work life or whatever, do you have anything that you do in your practice that helps you keep that signal strong and constant?
I mean, you know, I've been doing Byron Katie's work for so long. I think that's always a tool in my toolkit. And so like that's running even in my head, probably on some subconscious level, just being like, wait, is that true? Like looking at my stuff. But also just the importance of like when stuff gets really overwhelming, just okay, the physicality and just going and moving, jumping in cold water, whatever that looks like, just, you know, get engaged physically with something. It's like there's that Tony Robbins thing where he's like, change your state, your physical state. And that really does something. That's essential. And yeah, and I don't know if that's different for men and women with the movement, but I feel like all of us just as physical creatures, like we just got to do something.
Yeah.
Not that that's the only answer, but that's one of these great tools that can get overlooked when we just don't have to move right now.
Yeah. I think this is a really good point. I think for me, that always helps me always. And it also keeps it at bay. So either it's a prophylactic or it's a solution. And then sometimes having that one person you can call that you can actually take the piss out of it and have a laugh. I think that's important. Bitching is fine, but I think kind of being like, okay.
Yeah. Sharing it.
Yeah. But keeping your humor in there is, I think, one of the most important tools because it does also shift your state. Because it gives you a different view on something that you might be wrestling with. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where it's from, but it's the saying is something like a burden shared is a burden halved. And you do that for me a lot. Like you're that person that I can go and be like, yo, Gabby, damn.
So it's just that gentle reminder. Because again, we're not unique. And so I know a lot of people are doing their best, but still it just seems a little thicker, the air right now.
Yeah.
It's just a little thicker.
I agree.
All right. We can go back to something a little more techie. So Zuckerberg, he made a big announcement. I don't even know what it is. What is it?
I think so. As of recording this was yesterday, he went on Instagram and like really, it was just like a iPhone recorded video, like really not high production value. Just kind of like, hey guys, I'm going to tell you this thing. And he basically just said, we're going to open source AGI. And I was like, what? And we talked about this before, but AGI is artificial general intelligence. And that's like the big thing, meaning like that's a potentially just an unknown consciousness that we have no control over. And it's not, you know, what all these other companies talk about it is like, we're, you know, OpenAI, even them are like, that was the original mission, but no, now we're going to keep it closed source. We don't know if we can trust people with this or whatever it is. And he just was like, yeah, guys, so we have this plan and we have all these NVIDIA GPUs and CPUs and we have all this computing power and we're working on open sourcing AGI. And he said, he's like, oh, we're going to do it as safely as possible. But it was just kind of like, wait.
But why did he do it like that?
I don't really know. You got to ask him because it was shocking. And I have a lot of friends in the AI world that were all just like sending me stuff. They're like, what the fuck?
What were the comments? Did you read any of the comments?
I didn't read the comments. I just had friends like looking at it and like they've sent me just things being like, are you kidding? Like, what is happening? Like they even were having this AGI conversation so naturally and normally now that we're all talking about this like actual conscious entity that we might be all co-creating to some degree. And now he's talking about just, oh yeah, we're just going to open source it. Not even to say that that's wrong. I don't know how this
all plays out. So to the layman, really explain like why that's so monumental.
Well, open source is that everyone has access to the code. Mm-hmm. So you have it, just giving it out to the public. Like their model, like their, you know, ChatGPT model equivalent is called Llama. Mm-hmm. And so Llama 2, it's so they're, that's open source. And everyone was like, yeah, cool. Like, you know, these this is still AI compared to AGI. Mm-hmm. So this AI model is open source. And a lot of people appreciated that. And people are doing creative, cool stuff with it. And I think in the beginning of OpenAI, with when Elon was starting it with Sam and those guys, it was like, that was the goal, is to make something that was open. That's why it's called OpenAI.
Yeah.
So open source this thing. And so obviously they've pivoted and gone a different direction and it's not open source. But to have him just so seemingly casually come out and just say that, like on this, like,
do you think it's a competitive move against?
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a possibility, but this is a hell of a move. Like, even if it's competitive, whatever the impetus behind it is,
is there a way that the more you do it like that, that you're accessing everyone to help you build it more? And even though they say it's open, that really most of us won't know how to utilize that or access that for real. Like, you know, I was joking with you the other day about, Tesla's really like a mapping company.
Uh-huh.
Right. Like, yeah. Huh.
But that's not a joke.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Are they just using us to sort of figure out how to build it for them somehow?
I think a lot of the AI large language models currently are doing that. That's why, like, they've just released these things. And so it's like learning and figuring it out all kind of publicly to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And this, though, is different because, again, when you get to AGI, that's a conscious entity as far as we all understand. So that's a totally different ball game. And to just be like, yeah, casually, like, guys, yeah, we're going to open source it and we're going to create an open source. I was just like, whoa,
yeah,
whoa, whoa.
Sounds like it's a competition between all these companies.
Maybe.
Sounds like this is, I mean, you joke that the race between the US and China figuring it out is a real thing.
It is. I mean, it's a real thing in terms of like people's fear. But the reality is, I think, as far as we all know, the US is so much further ahead.
How is that possible?
What do you mean, Silicon Valley? How is that possible? Like that is like
I mean, how are we that far ahead on anything?
Than
China.
There's a multitude of reasons, but like, so Silicon Valley being the equivalent, if not better, than the Hollywood of tech, right?
Right.
So it just attracts the best talent. If you want to do that, like everyone comes from all over the world to work in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. and like if you look at a map of just the valley and like around San Jose, it's like you have Apple and Google and Facebook and or Meta and, you know, mm-hmm. like just Microsoft, everything is all right there. It's like you have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of market cap just right in this little vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's obscene. And any other country can, you know, the UK is starting, like they're doing a lot of work trying to like get their systems and like building infrastructure and trying to attract talent over there. And I'm sure China's doing a lot of stuff we don't know about. At the same time, I think Silicon Valley is just so much further ahead. I mean, this is where all this stuff was born, you know?
Okay. I like how optimistic you are.
I mean, I try and be, like we talked about, I try and be realistic. It just, my realistic perspective is seeming optimistic, but I also want to point out things that are like, whoa, what the?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were sharing that now Microsoft, is this for the first time in a long time, is more valuable than Apple?
Yeah.
But in the last 15 or so years?
For sure. I mean, few years ago, Microsoft wasn't even really in the conversation. You know, it was like Apple and then like Meta was up there and like, you know, there's these other companies that are emerging. But like, you know, for a long time, it was the oil companies were the most valuable companies. And it was a big deal when Apple even crossed the $1 trillion market cap.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden now it's $3 trillion, you know, and now Microsoft is come up and I really think in huge part, if not completely, because of their huge bet on AI. You know, they're the largest investors in OpenAI. And Apple's been really quiet on the AI front. Everyone thinks that they're building stuff behind the scenes, which is probably a safe bet. But they, in terms of like them coming out publicly and talking about AI, it hasn't really been part of the conversation. And obviously that's the biggest buzzword right now is AI. And everyone, you know, you say AI and you get this huge bump in your valuation. You know,
So this whole investment in Sam's company is probably, you think, what put him up there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because even if you look back last year before GPT was like, as GPT was just this time last year was kind of coming on the scene into our awareness, like, wait, what's this? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where their market cap was, but it was not. I don't think anybody would have predicted that this time next year they would be the number one ahead of Apple.
Wow.
So that was just like, oh, okay, good to know. We'll see how long it lasts, because, you know, Tim Cook could come out next week and say, okay, here's our AI suite of products that we've just been like working on in secret, and boom, you know. Yeah.
Do you have a feeling about who really has their hands around it the most?
If I was to bet,
if you're,
I would bet OpenAI.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, even when Google came out with their large model Gemini, like everything that they presented as like, this is the latest and greatest, and here's what we can do now. It's already everything that the current GPT can do, let alone the next version, whether it's GPT 4.5 or GPT 5 or whatever they're going to call it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so if they're like forcing themselves, Google, if they're forcing themselves to get out in front and be like, look what we have. And it's like just as good as the thing that's already out there from this other company with 700 employees, you know, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So remind me at this current moment, because I am a neophyte, you know, I only play around with ChatGPT. I do have the paid model. So I took a real big leap.
Yep. You got the GPT store now too.
Yeah, what is it, $19.99 a month?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about that first. So now the GPT store is out. I originally thought it was going to be like a paid deal. We even had all these, you know, great analogies that if you had a formula about something, you could go ahead and put that all and condense it for somebody, and then you could learn everything about marketing or whatever. But it's different.
Well, that part is still the case, what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. The way that they're doing the ad or the revenue share is that they're doing it by usage right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, you get a charge, whatever you want to use the GPT. But if your GPT is being used, they're going to give you a certain percent. And I don't even know if they've.
So it is a special cost. If I go, hey, I want to use Elijah's GPT, then I pay a little bump.
No.
It's in the cost, the whole membership cost.
Yeah.
So what's the difference of the one I'm paying for versus the GPT store?
You have access to it.
I do right you now do, for my $19.99
yes,
a month.
Yes, you do.
So I could use all of the stores for the same price?
Yes.
And why would they give a rev share? How are they going to keep up with that?
We're going to find out. Oh, they might change it. But they also, I mean, you have access for that membership. You have access to DALL-E, which is like the image generator. So you could just go on and be like, hey, create me a YouTube thumbnail for my next podcast. Or, you know, there's a lot that comes with that $20.
Interesting. So what are you using? What else is a part of ChatGPT besides the store and DALL-E? Do they have other things?
I mean, the store is, it's like there's a lot.
Did you look around?
I've been messing with it. It's cool. There's some cool things.
Tell me how you used it.
One that's really interesting is from a company called Consensus. Mm-hmm. And they take all of the research papers from PubMed and just everywhere across the internet. You can ask a question and it will give you all the citations for the research papers. And it comes up with some sort of a consensus based on the amount of research. Uh-huh. So everyone's like, oh, there's a study for this and there's a study for this. It's like, if you ask Consensus, it gives you the most studies about the thing. Like, I remember having a doctor at one point. I had high LDL and he was trying to get me to go on a statin. And I was like, isn't there research that says like statins hurt your mitochondria? And he's like, oh, well, no, there's only a few studies that say that. So now I can go on a Consensus in the doctor's office, pull it up, be like, look, there's 4,000.
Will it really tell you that?
It did. I looked. I checked.
I mean, do you think it can get at all kind of soiled though? Like if we started going, let's just say hypothetically talking about like a certain shot or something and like it being good protection. We don't think that data is soiled.
I think it's just going to go on the amount of like validated published studies.
Got it.
Yeah. But the statins affecting your mitochondria, that was like on Consensus. It was like, yes.
Really?
Yes, it does.
So people who like to self-diagnose will be in hog heaven.
Yeah. Or even these, like, you know, whenever someone says you, oh, well, there's a study that says da da da, and it's like, well, okay, let's see what there's more studies of.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
so that was a cool one.
Okay.
One interesting one was there's like a Joe Rogan one, and it's like all of the Joe Rogan thousands of podcasts and how many freaking hours. But you could just ask it anything from those podcasts. You're like, wait, at one of these 4-hour podcasts, I heard him mention like some great place to get ribs in Texas or whatever the thing is. And it'll be like, oh yeah, on episode, blah, 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 he recommends these places. And like,
who has permission to do that?
I don't know if anybody has permission to do this stuff right now. This is new territory, but it's on there as of right now.
What's that one called?
I think it's just called like Joe Rogan GPT. I can look it up, but wow. Yeah, they did the same thing with Andrew Huberman. It's like, you can ask like anything that it's like, data. Oh, what's his, you know, what's Huberman's sleep protocol? And it gives you, oh, he recommends these supplements. And yeah. So this is like what we were talking about last week before this came out. Like what, when you were saying, what would I do? You, Gabby. And I was like, well, you could just upload all your, you know, public available talks or podcasts, whatever it is. And then someone could have a interactive conversation with that. It's like, what does Gabby recommend for this? Or what is, you know, she talked to somebody, I can't remember who, and they said da da da.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, my store would offer about three things.
I'm totally
kidding. But they'd be like, well, she said a lot of different things that are in conflict. And no, I'm just kidding.
I mean, you know, but if you can take like the 4 billion hours of Joe Rogan, you can condense that into something
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You seem geeked out and excited about this.
I mean, it's cool.
I'm just trying to think about like who the hell's going to have more time to be doing this, you know?
What do you mean?
It's just funny how I find that the more technology makes it easier for me, I feel overwhelmed by how much stuff there is for me to be able, because then I'm like, oh, I want to see that. And I want to see this. I always feel slightly kind of behind. Mm-hmm. And it's like how I feel like if I see someone's podcast that I like, and I realize I haven't seen really paid, listened to any of their shows in like the last 7 or 10.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so that is an interesting, place where it's like there's more and it's condensed and it's easier, and then you're like, oh wow, one more thing.
Yeah,
so
I get that. And it's also, I think, really being aware that what you're talking about is the, you know, FOMO that we all experience, you know, that fear of missing out, whatever that is. So it's just being like, okay, I only have so much time.
Yeah,
I'm choosing to allocate this much time.
Yeah,
even if it's, I'm being conscious, I'm going to spend time just to learn this thing right now, so in the future I believe it's going to pay off by helping me save time, you know. But listen, nobody in this space that I know of, and I know a lot of people, can really keep up with the pace of change.
No, and I mean, listen, you know what I do, especially like when I'm cooking dinner. I think you know this. I default and I just go listen to Tim Dillon or Theo Vaughn. Yeah. Like I'll go the other way where I'm like, I want to kind of laugh. No, I want to laugh. And I sort of want to hear, especially Tim Dillon, because he does actually talk about stuff that's going on. He just, you know, it's like he was talking the other day. And I don't know why I get such a kick out of it, but I do. And I don't care. It's like my juvenile self, I guess. But he was talking about how, you know, you're going to own nothing and like it. And then he was talking about all these people who were on Social Security. And this guy was living and he was thinking about actually going to the pound and getting a dog. And that some months, you know, he's got an extra $150 to buy food that he doesn't probably want, like chicken and veggies. And so here's Tim Dillon. And you know how he does his voice? He's like, chicken, you want more chicken? You know, it's like, it's like this thing where sometimes when it is crazy, I need to laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way I can take it. So
for sure.
I mean,
I think that's great. You know, because so it's like eating. Like sometimes you got to have dessert.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just like it's the more serious it gets. Sometimes I'm like, you know what, I need to take a step back here.
Yeah,
and just have a laugh.
That's like self care.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's not having that. There's infinite amount of information in podcasts and whatever, more than we could ever consume. And so just being like, this is what I got today.
And that's what I want to remind people too, is as somebody who has practiced pretty religiously since 1987, 1988, a pretty active lifestyle with eating better choices. I mean, I did carbo load, I'm not going to lie, in the early 90s, because that's what we did.
Yep.
They were like, get a carbo load, you got a game tomorrow.
Yep.
So I had bagels and pasta. I did do that.
Yeah. It's all an experiment.
It's really just about being consistent and having a practice.
Yeah.
And don't get overwhelmed by it. Because even me, who knows a decent amount and has been involved for a period of time in this, sometimes I'm like, whoa, it's too much.
Yeah.
So
I did think, I was like, we should do the For Your Love of Tim Dillon. We can just do one podcast where we just wear the aviators and just go on fucking rants.
Only he can do it.
It's so amazing.
It's so amazing.
It's amazing. He just goes.
And he wears the coat, the beaver fur coat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You and I, you sent me a video of Jamie Dimon.
Mm.
And it's...
You sent it to me.
Did I send it to you?
Yeah, because we were talking at the...
Oh, because you'd sent me something about that you'd like that he said earlier.
It was during that New York Times thing where Elon told everybody to go fuck themselves.
Yes.
And I was like, and I heard Jamie's interview and it kind of went under the radar because that got all the attention. I was like, that guy's kind of a G. Like he's saying some really smart, not just like intellectually smart, but like emotionally thoughtful stuff about like how we all need to come together and we can't just be like blue and red and Democrat, Republican. And then you sent me this video.
Yeah. So he, for those of you who don't know who he is, and most of you wouldn't, he's, is he the CEO of JP Morgan?
Yeah.
So obviously I always feel like these guys in these financial institutes, they also have an inside view on things that are going on. But he basically sort of implied that we can't assume because maybe somebody's for a gun or in making America a good place to live. So you want people to have a living wage and be able to feed their kids and get an education, that then all of a sudden somehow he's like that they're Trumpers. Mm-hmm. He's like 75 million people. Like we're all more decent than whatever that notion is.
Yeah.
And so he was really reasonable. And I believe it was on CNBC.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting because they wouldn't even show, let's see, what's her name? Rachel Maddow, that group. And what other group wouldn't show Trump's acceptance speech.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to have misinformation or spread things that, I don't know.
Something, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Yeah, something like that.
And and so he comes on and says that, and this is not about being for Trump. It's just about somebody, a voice of reason.
Yeah.
That was all.
Yeah.
I thought he was a voice of reason. Yeah. And someone else was accusing, right? What were you telling me that they called the election or the numbers before?
Oh yeah. Well, that was what was so crazy about the Trump thing. Yeah. They were, cause like everyone on the Trump side was saying like, oh, you know, MSNBC and CNN, they won't show Trump's interviews. So like they hate Trump. And then I think it was like Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis came out and they're like, oh, because CNN called the election early in Iowa.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to support Trump. And it's like, so every side is being like, wait, what?
It was amazing.
What are we doing?
Yeah. So I just hope that people are slowing down, paying attention for themselves, and maybe listening to people a little bit with a voice of reason. Okay, so I'm going to play you one thing I heard today that I played for Viola, and people can find it. It's probably a few minutes, so if people are sick of us, thank you for your time, Elijah. I appreciate you so much. And I'm always learning, and I'll tell you, I'll mess around. I'll go into the store now that I know. I'm not so into the image generators for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I'm just not.
Well, you don't use that so much in your day-to-day.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is from mentorspark.erix on Instagram, but I'm not promoting them. I just liked this part of what he shared. So I'll play it.
Yeah. Hold on.
Principles allows you to gain deeper wisdom about yourself and the world. The first principle is mentalism. Mentalism states that the entire universe is mental in nature. Our thoughts and consciousness shape our subjective experience of reality. The second principle is correspondence. Correspondence refers to the idea that patterns existing on the macro scale of the cosmos also exist on the micro scale within an individual. As above, so below. The third principle is vibration. Vibration states that all things in existence consist of energy vibrating at different rates. By controlling one's own vibration, one's subjective experience can be shaped. The fourth principle is polarity. Polarity recognizes that apparent opposites like light, dark, good, evil are extremes of the same thing. Integrating opposites leads to truth. The fifth principle is rhythm. Rhythm reflects the ebb and flow of the universe between extremes in an endless cycle. The sixth principle is cause and effect. Cause and effect states that every effect has a preceding cause. One can influence outcomes by one's actions. The seventh principle is gender. Gender realizes masculine and feminine energies exist in all things and must be balanced for creation. Understanding.
Anyway, I thought it was very pretty. And which reminds me of the book we've been sharing.
That's what I was going
to
say.
So I wanted to play that. And then I don't know how I found this book, who sent it to me, but then I shared it with you and you are liking it as well.
Loved it.
So it's a book that if I am not alone listening to, I can't catch it. I'll be honest with you. And before I forget, Dr. Nicola Perra's book is How to Be the Love You Seek.
Got it.
So I was close, but I was off. So anyway, so this is a book that it's only four chapters. And it's called Leadership. and The New Science. It's by Margaret J. Wheatley. So if anyone is interested, it's about quantum physics in life.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love for you to share what you've been enjoying about it, because I think it's a beautiful book.
Right. I mean, there's so much that they talked about in that, especially as above, so below, and that's just fractals, right? You know, it's just like, you know, she talks about the Mandelbrot set in the book, which is like this infinite in, infinite out. It's like when you try and measure a coastline, you know, it's like actually is you can get as granular as you want. You can get down to the grains of sand. You can actually never really measure a coastline. But I think one of the things that stood out to me, I have a bunch of notes in that book, but the idea that leadership is what you do, and that it's not so much a role. Like it's you show up as like what you do, and you're how you are in the world, and what we are, our actions determine who is the leader. It's not like you're just given the role. Okay, you're the leader, so you take it. It's like, no, you earn that, or you do something that puts you in the position to then be the leader, because we all listen to that. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, I see that especially in this house with Laird, and it's just like, I feel like you live that, and it's just, it's really that got me. And there's quite a, I can go through my notes on it too, but that one stood out in a really just simple, clear way. And it, you know, I think about it for my one job, you know, when I'm directing stuff, because it's like in that creative endeavor, like I'm in that position of a leadership as, you know, as a director, but it's really, I see it as actually Ray Dalio said this term, and I see it in the same way. It's like, it's an idea meritocracy, where it's like the best idea wins. Mm. And for me, I just see my role as helping facilitate those ideas and pointing out and be like, yes, no, like let's all collaborate and create this thing together. Mm. Obviously that's very unique to just being a director, because it's a collaborative medium, but in all of those things and all that we do, it's like leadership is what you do. And that decides who's going to be the captain on that one.
Yeah. So we wanted to bring that up because that's sort of current this week. So The Leadership of the New Science, and it's by Margaret Wheatley. So if people are interested, Lige,
yo,
I might become a tech head yet. You never know.
You kind of are. Look, you got the whole podcast set up.
Oh, no. Listen, when we start this, I say to Lige, yeah, go ahead, get everything dialed up. Because I mean, if I had to figure out how to get all the cameras and everything recording, maybe, but.
I think you've done a great job. And you listen, tech head is a very relative term, because like you could ask somebody that has no idea and you're like, oh, you are dialed, like from emails to podcasts to mics and everything. You've got this.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So to next time, we'll see what next week brings. The ever-changing world.
It truly is. Like, and that statement has maybe never been more true. Like Sam Altman said, he's like talking about OpenAI and what he's doing. He's like, this might be the last hard thing I ever do.
Yeah.
So,
but we still have to be people.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Okay.
And this is the time of who knows?
Sanity and humanity. Let's go.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you want to learn more, there is a ton of valuable information on my website. All you have to do is go to GabrielleReese.com or head to the episode show notes to find a full breakdown with helpful links to studies, research, books, podcasts, and so much more. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out and send them to @GabbyReese on Instagram. And if you feel inspired, please subscribe. I'll see you next week.